Hello and welcome to The Laydown, a podcast where three booksellers from Gibson's Bookstore in Concord, New Hampshire chat about all things literary. My name is Ryan.
I'm Hillary.
And I'm Kelso.
So before we get started, I actually have some very exciting news. As I'm sure you all know by now, listeners, we are avid fans of the audiobook company Libro FM. Libro FM is the first and only company which lets you purchase audiobooks directly from your favorite local bookstore. You know, like us. You can pick from more than 125,000 audiobooks, including New York Times bestsellers and recommendations from booksellers. You'll get the same audiobooks at the same price as the largest audiobook company out there. You know who. But you'll be part of a different story, one that supports community. If you're new to audiobooks, they're the perfect way to get more books into your busy life. Listen during your commute, while doing chores, walking the dog, or just relaxing at home. All you need is a smartphone and the free Libro FM app. If you already love audiobooks and don't know what to listen to next, check out the recommendations and curated lists from people who know audiobooks best, booksellers. Well, I am thrilled to announce that our podcast listeners can now use the code LAYDOWN at checkout and get three audiobooks for the price of one credit. Yes, you heard that right. Get 3-for-1 audiobooks with your first month of membership with the special code LAYDOWN. You can also use a direct link, libro.fm/redeem/laydown. We will put all of that info in the show notes.
Yay! We love Libro.
So excited for that. So let's jump into it. Let's talk about books we've been reading and books we're excited about and book news and all that good stuff. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay.
So I'm finishing up a book, and I am nowhere finished with another book. The first book I'm finishing up is called Weather by Jenny Offill. Offill.
Oh, she wrote Department of Speculation, right?
Yes.
Oh, cool.
So this is a review copy. It's not coming out until February of next year. Mm-hmm. And I picked it up because it looked really short.
And it is. It's a teeny little
book. It's a tiny book. And I've never read Department of Speculation. I know the both of you have. And
yeah, we did it as a book club book a couple years ago.
Yeah, that was one that I think Michael handed at me. He just walked by and handed it to me.
I loved it. It was a little iffy with our book club members because she's an introvert. She's a very different kind of writer.
Yeah.
I love her.
She really is. So, I don't even know how to explain this book. I'm just going to read the little blurb at the front here. Lizzie is a librarian at the university where she was once a promising graduate student. She dropped out years ago in an attempt to rescue her younger brother from the throes of addiction. But one day, her old mentor, Sylvia, asks for a favor. She wants Lizzie to answer the mail for her famous doom-laden podcast, Hell in High Water. Soon, Lizzie is fielding questions from left-wingers worried about climate change and right-wingers worried about the decline of Western civilization. As Lizzie obsessively researches disaster psychology and survivalist strategies, her answers grow increasingly apocalyptic and unhinged.
Oh, man.
And they're short little fragmented sections, and it's a very quick book to read, but it's like reading poetry where she just writes a paragraph, and it just like punches you in the gut. And the entire time I've been reading this, all I can think about is, have you ever seen like a figure skater close her arms and spin really fast,
yeah,
and all of a sudden they like let their arms out, and then everything falls apart?
Yeah.
So I feel this tension building and building and building, and it happens, the turning point is the 2016 election results, where, you know, all hell breaks loose, essentially, and then everybody just slowly starts spiraling out of control.
Wow.
It's how it feels when I read it. I just love it. It's so
cool.
Great. I was very shocked and excited that I found this new author.
Yeah,
that
sounds
like
really interesting.
I just want to jump in here for one second, because I'm reading this as well. It's funny, we always are reading the same thing. But this little piece made me laugh out loud. Q, what is the philosophy of late capitalism? A, two hikers see a hungry bear on the trail ahead of them. One of them takes out his running shoes and puts them on. You can't outrun a bear, the other whispers. I just have to outrun you, he says. This is the world
accurate
we live in. Yes.
She
is so pithy and funny and also distressing all at the same time. I'm loving it so far.
Oh, yeah. It's such a great book, so I'm going to be finishing that up tonight. Yes. So this book, I'm reading Ducks Newbury Port by Lucy Ellman.
Yes.
It was long listed, and now it is shortlisted for the Booker Prize this year. It is a honker of a book. It is over 1,000 pages long. It's in paperback. There has been an issue with trying to find this book because it is published by a small press called Biblioasis, who is out in Canada. And this, I think, is like her second or third book that she's written. And now it's been nominated for a Booker Prize. It's just gone everywhere. So It's pretty hard to find. I picked this up at the library. As you both can probably see, I'm about 250 pages into it, and I barely made a dent.
Yeah.
So it's like the length of three good-sized novels.
Yeah, it's huge.
This book is about a woman, an Ohio housewife, who is making some type of baked good for restaurants in our area. The way this book is written is there are no... it's like the whole book is only like four or five sentences long.
Woof.
There is no paragraph breaks. There's no indentations. Oh, there's no chapter breaks. Nothing. Oh, and
it just keeps going.
It's just about this one woman's train of thought in Ohio as she's baking pies one winter. And it's this big allegory of like how the United States is now, and she just tackles everything, but it's literally her train of thought.
That's really interesting.
Every single sentence she starts with the fact that da 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 da,
and then it just goes forever. Yep.
The fact that this, the fact that that, and then my favorite parts are you can see where she starts singing because they have these little like notations.
Oh, there's little music notes,
right next to. Oh gosh. And the other thing that I really like about this book is that you think that you're not going to like it, but it's very soothing to kind of read this woman's train of thought. I don't know why. It takes you a minute or two to get into it, but it just soothes me right out. It's like listening to the ocean.
Yeah, it's like meditative.
Lake. Right. And I
want to hear the Libro FM version of this
book. Yeah, right.
So
I know of a couple other bookstores that just keeps selling out of it.
Yeah.
They keep getting it in. It takes them forever to come in, and then they sell out of it. Because everybody is curious about this book. That's awesome.
So that's what I'm going to be reading that for the next 3 months.
Yeah, seriously.
Taking me forever.
Yeah. Hillary, do you want to go next?
Sure. I feel like I'm in this whirlwind of books that are both nonfiction and fiction that have to do with the abuse of women and children.
Mm-hmm.
It began with, I got really sick recently. Yeah. And you know when you get sick and you read a book and it enters your consciousness in this way that's like this fever dream?
Yeah.
I was reading The Testaments by Margaret Atwood, her new book that is that picks up where The Handmaid's Tale left off 15 years later. And it takes us all back to
Gilead,
the same community in The Handmaid's Tale. And I actually brought in my copy of The Handmaid's Tale that is inscribed to me from my mother, Merry Christmas, Hillary, in 1986, XXOO
it's so
Mom.
Cute.
My hardcover version. So I read this book in 1986 as a young woman, and I remember it terrified me, and I thought, yep, we are heading down this road. And then it seemed things got a lot better, and now things seem to have gotten a lot worse, and I think that's why Margaret Atwood felt compelled to follow up with The Testaments. I can tell you The Testaments is excellent. If you like The Handmaid's Tale, it's unputdownable. And then the next thing I read was Stephen King's The Institute.
Mm-hmm. Which came out on the same day.
They came out on the same day.
Yeah.
Stephen King writes a lot more than Margaret Atwood does. He puts out a lot more books. So I think he felt like, oh, fine, I can come out on the same day.
Yeah. He's like, I don't care. I don't need the.
But Stephen King is also one of these writers who uses, so quote-unquote genre fiction to address political issues. Mm-hmm. And the Institute is really, I believe, his response to the Trump administration separating children from their parents on the border mm-hmm. and holding them in terrible conditions. Mm-hmm. It is a very frightening book about children who have telekinesis or the ability to read other people's minds, who are separated from their parents, who are murdered. And then they're held in captivity to be used as weapons by the government. And it's something that has been going on for 60, 70 years until this batch of children comes along and decide enough is enough. It is, as most Stephen King books are, just compulsively readable, mm-hmm. even if it is very long. Loved it. Highly recommended.
Good.
But to go along with these... I read two nonfiction books. One, I've recently made a staff pick. It's called No Visible Bruises by Rachel Louise Snyder. The subtitle is What We Don't Know About Domestic Violence Can Kill Us. This book is a deeply researched, excellent book, written by a woman who spent 30 years writing about domestic violence and researching domestic violence. It begins with a case study of a young woman who gets married at the age of, well, she leaves to have a child with a 24-year-old man when she's 14 years old.
Oh.
And spends the next 10 years in a very bad relationship with him until he murders her and their two children. It is heart-wrenching and crushing. And she interviews the parents of both the man who murdered the wife and child, and the parents of the woman. Mm. And it's just heart-wrenching how these things are right in front of us and we don't see them. I think it's an important book. I think, I really believe if you can bear it, you should read it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's going to help you identify this kind of thing happening right in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
As I read through it, I thought of women that I knew over the course of my life and where... yeah, this was happening, and I didn't realize it, and now I do.
Oh.
The other one is She Said by Jodi Kantor and Megan Toohey, subtitled Breaking the Sexual Harassment Story That Helped Ignite a Movement. It's about Harvey Weinstein. And and Jodi Kantor and Megan Toohey are the two reporters who finally convinced women to come forward and mm-hmm. go on the record with what Harvey Weinstein had been doing for 30 years.
Wow. It's a great book.
It really is, I would say, this generation's All the President's
yes.
Men.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It
yes.
reads
yep.
like that. It is just astounding. And even more, you might think, I know everything about Harvey Weinstein. I don't want to read any more about him. What you need to read about in this book are the people who surrounded him mm-hmm. and enabled him.
Mm-hmm.
From the board members of his board, the people who worked for him who were going to lose a paycheck if they didn't
yep.
do what he wanted, the lawyers, including female lawyers,
mm-hmm.
Lisa Bloom and Gloria Allred, who have put themselves forward as great feminist lawyers who were working for him and undermining these women on the down low. It is so
wow.
shocking and disturbing. There is excellent reporting here. I highly, highly recommend this book.
Hmm.
Compulsively readable and it's important. It's just
yeah.
important to read. So there's me.
Wow. I have very different.
Good.
So I just finished Gideon the Ninth.
Yeah. Oh my God, you guys.
I just started it.
This book.
Yeah. Oh, my favorite blurb is right on the cover, and it's just lesbian necromancers in space, and that's what it is.
Yep.
Okay, two things about this book, because I don't even think I could really summarize the plot without giving things away, so I'll just say it drops you into this world with absolutely no backstory. It gives you absolutely no assistance. It trusts you as a reader to figure things out as you go. after a couple of chapters, you find yourself on equal footing with the characters because they end up in a place where they don't know what's going on. And so then you're all kind of in the same spot. So give it a few chapters. Because I started this and I knew that everyone was loving it, but I kept rereading paragraphs because I was like, what is happening? What is going on? Stick with it. Everything comes together. Everything makes sense. You get answers to your questions. It does not give you any footholds. You are scrabbling into this story, but it really pays off later. And the second thing is pay close attention to characters. There are like 20 main characters in this book, and they are all important.
Yeah. There's a list at the front of the
book,
right?
There's a list at the front. And I went back and forth and sort of tried to remember who was who. But there were definitely a few that, I don't know, I was so focused on Gideon that I kept switching other characters in my head. And then I would have to go back and be like, wait, is that this one? Okay. All right. So just try to, you know, pay attention to them as you are introduced to them. Keep it straight in your head, and reference the list at the front. It is fantastic. Gideon is awesome and a great fighter, and she's funny and kind of bratty, and she's really fun to read. She's a fun, kind of disagreeable character. All the characters are really, really great, and the story is wild, and the magic is so cool. And yeah, highly, highly, highly recommend Gideon the Ninth. It's by Tamsin Muir. It just came out. It's awesome. And I feel like everyone who's read it has been like, oh my God, this book.
So can I excite you even more?
Yeah.
So it's a series.
Yes.
So Harrow the Ninth, which is the second one, is going to be coming out June of 2020.
Oh, that's so soon.
Yes.
Oh my God. So, okay.
Just FYI.
All right.
It's coming.
Okay. All right. The other book I have a few I'm really, really excited about. Wayward Son, the sequel to Carry On by Rainbow Rowell, comes out Tuesday the 24th, which is, let's see, when am I putting this podcast out? Last week. I am so excited for this. Rainbow has never written a sequel before, and I'm so thrilled that this is the book that she has decided to turn into a series. It's a YA fantasy with LGBT characters, and it is so good, and I'm so excited. I'm trying to reread Carry On in time for Wayward Son on Tuesday. So I am so excited for that. I love Rainbow Rowell so much. And then finally, I am also reading The Testaments. I'm almost done with it. And everything Hillary said is absolutely true. If you liked Handmaid's Tale, this is, I mean, you're going to love it. I actually found that it helped me understand Handmaid's Tale even more because there is some backstory in there and things that they talk about and bring up. I was like, oh yeah, I definitely didn't understand the, I guess, implications of The Handmaid's Tale the first time I read it, whereas Testaments is much more, like, clear in how scary everything is.
And there's more viewpoints in it.
Yes,
Handmaid's
I think that's
Tale
what it
was very much Offred's singular point of view.
Yes, whereas this has some outsiders of Gilead.
And it has, it has multiple points of view in it. Aunt Lydia.
Yep.
Two young women.
Yep. Yeah, it's
and I think
those are the three main, and then I think at the very end you get some sort of additional testaments. It's really good. But I bring it up because you all may have heard about the controversy that happened regarding our enemy.
The company that shall not be named, although we will name them.
Good old Amazon. If you're not in the book world, if you don't work and live in the book world, you may not know that some books have very strict street smart dates, and they are strict on sale dates. It's why you'll have a book like The Testaments has a very strict, it goes on sale on you know, the 17th or whatever, and it cannot be sold before that day.
It's almost always a Tuesday. It's the lay down day.
It's the reason
we
have this podcast, The Lay Down. There are big books, things like Stephen King, things like Margaret Atwood, Gideon the Ninth, Wayward Son, The Starless Sea. They have strict dates. They cannot be sold before these dates. And I don't know if you guys remember, but like when Harry Potter was coming out, you literally couldn't even post a photo of the unopened boxes of Harry Potter before the Tuesday that it came out. They are very, very strict, and independent bookstores, if anything like that were to happen, if a customer got their hands on a copy before the date, the bookstore would be very severely punished. There are serious consequences
for that. They would withhold future copies of the book.
Yes, so you would miss out on like the first couple weeks of sales, for example, which is devastating to a small indie bookstore. Mm-hmm. Some of these bookstores really rely on the big release titles to sort of help keep them afloat. So, The Testaments had an embargo on it. You could not ship it before a certain date. You could not open the boxes before a certain date. And customers were not to have their hands on it until Tuesday when it came out. Amazon shipped something like 800 copies a week early. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden, Amazon customers were posting photos of The Testament saying, "Hey, cool. I got my copy early. How cool is that?" Mm-hmm. And indie bookstores, we were not pleased. That's right. Because if we had done that, oh boy, big trouble for us. Whereas Amazon, I don't know that, I mean, maybe they got a fine or something, but
they won't even say what happened. They supposedly did something, but the publisher's not going to withhold books from Amazon because they sell so many books through Amazon.
Right.
It is basically like, well, I won't go toward the political situation right now, but it is like people behaving in a way where they believe there will be no consequences.
Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, Amazon doesn't make any money selling books.
That's right.
They are selling it at a 40% discount and Handmaid's Tale at a 50% discount, which if you add those two together, winds up being less than the cover price of The Testaments.
Yep.
That is deliberately to undercut independent booksellers. They are trying to put all of us out of business.
Yeah. It's not hyperbole when we call them evil. They don't make any money from selling books. They make their money elsewhere, and bookstores cannot compete. You know, we can't offer a 40% discount to our customers. That's what we get the book at cost. We would lose money.
It's called a loss leader. They do it deliberately. They lose money on it, but they feel like they can make it up elsewhere.
Yes. And so one of the huge issues, aside from just in general breaking the embargo, a really huge issue was that you would then have customers coming in saying, a week early, do you have The Testaments? And if you said, no, it doesn't come out until next week, well, my friend Susie got hers today. Well, I'll just order mine from Amazon then.
Yeah.
Now, luckily, indie booksellers made such a huge stink so quickly about this, and it went so viral that I actually think the general public kind of saw what was happening. And so I personally didn't come across anyone coming to Gibson's begging for a copy of The Testaments. I don't know if others did, but it was not as awful as it could have been had booksellers across the country not joined their voices together. Yeah. There was a New York Times article about it.
But it does beg the question, will there come a day when Amazon just says,
forget it.
Forget your hard sell-by dates. Mm-hmm. We're going to sell this when we want to. Mm-hmm. And if you want to sell through us, then you're going to just have to let us do it.
Right.
And I think that day is not far away.
Because no matter what the fines are, it won't even put a dent in Amazon's, you know, bottom line. Like, it's not going to hurt them. There's nothing we can do to hurt them except publishers not selling their books through Amazon. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know that we will see that day come. Maybe, but the only way to fight back is to buy your books from indie bookstores and stop buying books on Amazon and stop buying things that you can get locally on Amazon.
That's right.
Because they are actively putting people out of business. And frankly, they don't care. That is, I think, their end goal. They want to be the only game in town.
And once they're the only game in town, I can guarantee you, you will not be getting 50% off
a book. No, of course not.
You will pay whatever they want you to pay for.
Yeah. So they shipped theirs out somewhere around 800 copies. We don't have exact numbers.
Mm-hmm.
A week early. Bookstores didn't even get their boxes until like a day or two before it was supposed to go on sale. So,
and the boxes literally say, you may not open this box until the sell-by date.
Yes.
It's a little hard to understand how Amazon opened those boxes and sent out those books.
Right? Yeah. And so this is why we implore people to shop local.
I feel like it's happening today where I feel like a lot of people are waking up to this fact that our dollars do have a say.
Mm-hmm.
Our dollars do matter.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to keep our Main Street alive.
Yeah. Well, and there's a tie-in to something that somebody we want to talk about, which is Ann Patchett. Ann Patchett, the beloved author whose new book comes out next week, The Dutch House, which I've read and is an excellent, excellent book. She opened her own bookstore, Parnassus Bookstore in Nashville, several years ago, and Amazon opened a bricks and mortar store across the street from her like a month ago.
Oh my God.
Which is like designed to put her out of business.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that right there is just, why would you do that? You know, right across the street from the bookstore opened by a woman who is a beloved, excellent author, who opened a bookstore when there weren't others in that community, who's not making a ton of money doing it, did it as a mission of love.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to, thank you, Amazon, open a bricks and mortar bookstore directly across the street.
God.
Just evil. Really evil. So, but that said, we should talk about the Dutch House.
Let's talk about the Dutch House because Ann Patchett is coming to Concord October 2nd. We are so, so thrilled to be partnering with the Capital Center for the Arts and NHPR to bring her to the main stage for an evening of literary discussion with NHPR's Peter Biello. They'll be in conversation about the Dutch House, which the little blurb is that it is a richly moving story that explores the indelible bond between two siblings, the house of their childhood, and a past that will not let them go. And there will be a Q&A with the audience after that. Tickets are still available. You can purchase those through the Capital Center.
And they come with a book.
They do come with a book. We're going to put a link for that and all that information in the show notes. But we are so, so excited. We love Ann Patchett. She is such a beloved author. Our customers love her. And the Dutch House sounds so amazing.
I read this book and it just cut me to the quick because when I was a young teenager, my parents bought an amazing house on the Cape. It was an old shingle mansion that they could not afford. And we moved into it, and that house just entered all of our psyches. And we just were so wed to that house. And it had no decent heat. And it was the 1970s, and the oil embargo happened.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the heating bill, the house was lost to bankruptcy.
Oh.
And I dreamt of that house every night for decades. I mean,
wow.
I dreamt about that house constantly. And when I picked up this book, it is such this, it's similar story. These kids who are raised in this house, the Dutch House, which is this incredible mansion in Pennsylvania, that just sounds beautiful, but also comes with so much baggage and so weighs them down and really winds up wrecking their family in a certain way.
Wow.
Just beautifully written. The love between this brother and sister in this book is just so moving. I loved it. I couldn't put it down. And I highly recommend it. And if you're an Ann Patchett fan, you've read her books like Commonwealth or
Bel Canto.
Mm. This is right up there with the best of her books.
Nice.
And I cannot wait to hear her speaking.
Yes. So here is a very quick clip from the audiobook of The Dutch House. Enjoy.
Part 1. Chapter 1. The first time my father brought Andrea to the Dutch House, Sandy, our housekeeper, came to my sister's room and told us to come downstairs. Your father has a friend he wants you to meet, she said. Is it a work friend? Maeve asked. She was older and so had a more complex understanding of friendship. Sandy considered the question. I'd say not. Where's your brother? Window seat, Maeve said. Sandy had to pull the draperies back to find me. Why do you have to close the drapes? I was reading. Privacy, I said. Though at 8, I had no notion of privacy. I liked the word, and I liked the boxed-in feel the draperies gave when they were closed. As for the visitor, it was a mystery. Our father didn't have friends, at least not the kind who came to the house late on a Saturday afternoon. I left my secret spot and went to the top of the stairs to lie down on the rug that covered the landing. I knew from experience I could see into the drawing room by looking between the newel post and the first baluster if I was on the floor. There was our father in front of the fireplace with a woman, and from what I could tell, they were studying the portraits of Mr. and Mrs. Vanubeek. I got up and went back to my sister's room to make my report. It's a woman, I said to Maeve. Sandy would have known this already. Sandy asked me if I'd brushed my teeth, by which she meant, had I brushed them that morning? No one brushed their teeth at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Sandy had to do everything herself because Jocelyn had Saturdays off. Sandy would have laid the fire and answered the door and offered drinks and, on top of all that, was now responsible for my teeth. Sandy was off Mondays. Sandy and Jocelyn were both off Sundays because my father didn't think people should be made to work on Sundays. I did, I said, because I probably had. Do it again, she said, and brush your hair. The last part she meant for my sister, whose hair was long and black and as thick as 10 horsetails tied together. No amount of brushing had ever made it look brushed. Once we were deemed presentable, Maeve and I went downstairs and stood beneath the wide archway of the foyer, watching our father and Andrea watch the Vanhoobakes. They didn't notice us, or they didn't acknowledge us, hard to say, and so we waited. Maeve and I knew how to be quiet in the house, a habit born of trying not to irritate our father, though it irritated him more when he felt we were sneaking up on him.
So we got to talk about the events going on in October. Yes. Because we have so many events in October.
All the events.
Just in the first week of October, we've got on October 1st, former New Hampshire Poet Laureate Marie Harris and Yankee storyteller Rebecca Rule share their work from their two latest books. That's the first day in October. October 2nd, we've got Ann Patchett at the Capitol Center. Tickets are still available. October 6th, Archer Mayer is coming back to Gibson's. He's got a new Joe Gunther novel called Bomber's Moon. October 7th, we're discussing recursion at our book club. That's by Blake Crouch. So that's just the first week. We have something like 13 or 14 events in October. It's insane. Go to our website and check out our calendar because holy guacamole, there's a lot going on. All props go to our events coordinator, Elizabeth Jewell, for being amazing and scheduling so many things and being so, so busy. So with all that said, you can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. Our website is gibsonsbookstore.com, and we're also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. We'll put those links in the show notes along with all of the books we talked about today. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the stacks.
Bye!
Bye!